We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello once again, and welcome to the Riverfront Bengals Show, episode 38, where we talk mostly about the Bengals, sometimes about the folk hero that is Ellie De La Cruz. Have you heard of that guy?
Once or twice.
Yeah, he's coming soon, and he's going to conquer the world. We're going to be free from communism and all the isms, and he's just going to be emperor of the world and benevolent for all of those. Anyway, I am Joe Farsing. Right next to me is the handsome lad, is Greg Neiman. What is going on, my friend?
Living the dream, enjoying the summer. We finally got nice weather in Cincinnati. I'm happy about it. I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's officially summer weather. I mean, weather it's in the 80s. It's going to be up towards 90, I think, tomorrow and Friday. So it's time. It's here. I hate weather in the 90s, but you know, I'm ready for it right now until it's July. And
yeah, give it a week. I'll be complaining about the heat. So
right. Well, see, this year I've got my son cutting the grass all by himself this year. Like, I've cut it once, and so I don't have that complaint of having to go out there and bake, and melt and sweat 10 pounds off. You know, we don't even have a big yard, but I don't have to worry about that anymore. I go out there and string trim, and so I've got less to complain about. So I still will complain, because that's
a beautiful thing. Child labor. I mean, you can really, you got to work it for what it's worth. I mean, that's a big moment in a dad's life, that the son cutting the grass for the first time. That's nice.
That's why you had lots of kids for division of labor. Yeah. And it's, yeah, we're not an agrarian society, and I live in the burbs, but it's, you have kids, put them to work. My daughter isn't old enough to be too useful out in the yard yet, but I mean, she's getting there. We'll put her to work. So
100%.
Before we get going here, if you guys are watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're listening on Spotify, you listen on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate us, etc. 5 stars only. You guys should already be listening to or watching, depending on which medium, is Late Night Reds with Tim Daniel and whatever guests he has. He always has some good guests. Occasionally, it's me, not often, because you know he wants to keep viewers. Or you can watch the OG Riverfront with Chad and Nate and their merry band of travelers that they had. They had Nate had Carlos and actually Carlos Guevara and Tim last week, and that was a really fun episode. So, again, follow us on Patreon.com. Riverfront Cincy, yeah. Come join us on Slack. It's a fun time. Outside of that, we'll quit bugging you for the day. On to Bengals news and notes. Again, we haven't been here for 2 weeks, and there is not a whole lot that we've missed, that you've missed. All voluntary workouts are continuing this week. Only Jonah Williams and Cheeto are not attending. Cheeto, obviously, he's rehabbing from his knee injury. Understand why Jonah's not here, and it has nothing to do with any disgruntled from being moved from left side to right side or anything like that. He's in the last year of his deal, and no sense in getting an injury. I mean, he's hurt himself in camp before. No sense getting an injury in a voluntary camp. So expect him here when pads go on, but no reason to be worried about him not being here yet. Tyler Boyd showed up for the first time in camp. Again, he's on the last year of his deal. He showed up in excellent spirits. I don't know if you heard any, saw any of the quotes, anything. Like, he basically is, I've made a lot of money in my time. It's time for these guys to get paid. I get that I'm behind them. The only thing that a lot of people heard from the, from when he was speaking to reporters is the viral clip of him saying if he hadn't gotten injured in the AFC Championship game, the Bengals would have moved on. So of course everyone's focusing on that. But again, someone in the last year of his deal, but he said he's a Bengal for life. It doesn't matter where he goes after this. I mean, Cincinnati is always going to be his home. Something you love hearing, and a guy that's, he knows that the Bengals drafted his replacements this year in Chuck Sizzle and Andre Yoshivas, but he's here. I mean, he's working to make the Bengals better, whether it's, you know, him taking all the snaps or him breaking in the new guys. So I love to see it. What do you think?
I just think it shows exactly what Cincinnati wants to see, and that's just a super down-to-earth, normal guy. It sounds like what I think I or you would sound like if we were on a press conference talking about that. I've made a ton of money in my career. I love Cincinnati. I'll always be a Bengal, and I understand the business of what I'm working in. These guys that get hurt by the business of the NFL, I think it's crazy, and I think Tyler Boyd has a great perspective on this, that this, if you're going to play in the NFL, I promise you somebody that you once loved as a team is going to cut you, trade you something. Nobody has a career in one spot anymore. I mean, Tom Brady played for the Bucks, so that's all you need to know. At some point, you're going to be somewhere else that wasn't necessarily your first choice. I just think Tyler Boyd's got a super wonderful perspective on that that's really down to earth, and who knows? He may go down in Bengalore as the greatest thing ever when he has a massive Super Bowl winning catch this year. So more power to him. I loved his attitude, his mentality, and I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, and if you look at where his stats are among team history, I mean, he's going to end up within, if he has a solid season, he's going to end up somewhere within the top five of receptions and yards and things like that for the team history. And he's still relatively young. I mean, he's 29, so he's still going to get a decent sized chunk of change from somebody in the next offseason. He understands it's not going to be here in Cincinnati, and he's mature enough that he's cool with it. You know, enjoy what he's been here. He's been here for 8 years now, so he's made a lot of memories, made a lot of money, and you know, made a whole hell of a lot out of himself. So.
And played a lot of good football.
Exactly. Not if you're a Ravens fan. You always worry about the fourth.
So much for the playoffs. They ain't making the playoffs. No, sir.
Yeah. Bengals and Packers, they have a preseason game, and they will hold one joint practice this summer before the preseason game. Hopefully no one's going to go full Aaron Donald mode and start swinging helmets like their baseball bats and using them as clubs.
Yes,
I still have no idea how that man walked away without any sort of repercussions or anything like that. I mean, I guess when you're, you know, best, you know, one of the top two or three defensive tackles in NFL history, you can do anything just short of murder on a field, and you know, and you're fine. But let's hope we don't see any crap like that. Let's, you know, go out and, you know, practice hard, practice your ass off. They're going to get in shoving matches. They're going to get, you know, it's going to be some scrum, but just don't do anything stupid. You don't want to see a Packer get hurt. You don't want to see a Bengal get hurt from stupid extracurricular crap.
Yeah. Luckily, they shouldn't have any bad blood. I mean, I don't know of anything that would cause these two teams bad blood. Bengals Rams was kind of obvious. So you can figure out the bad blood there. But I think, you know, this is a good joint practice venture here. I think the Packers trying to kind of find their own, make their way. I don't think they're going to be ready to fight. I think everybody can kind of chill and just focus on getting better, which I think makes this a really good joint practice.
There's going to be love on the field. It's Jordan love, but I mean, there's going to be love on the field. You know, it's going to be all – no, but yeah,
it's all good.
I think, especially for the Packers, I think it's a really good because, again, you're getting more competition in these practices than you are actually during the games. And what better barometer of where Jordan Love is right before the season than to go up against a veteran defense, you know, in these concocted schemes. I mean, they set up all these scenarios, and you're going up against Lou, like basically the best schemer in the NFL. I mean, he's going to throw exotic stuff. You know, obviously it's not going to be hitting or anything like that, but he's going to be seeing all these funky coverages, and you don't know who's going to be dropping into coverage. You don't know who's going to be rushing. Again, it's, you know, I'm looking at it from the other, you know, the other side. I think it's a great thing for him. And Bengals, again, it's, you know, anytime you get a chance to hit somebody else or to work against somebody else, if you can do it without it turning into a crime scene, it's a good thing. Because again, it's I like the fact that, you know, I love these practices because you can fabricate all these, you know, scenarios. You know, it's not a game where it's dictated by the actual time on the clock. You run whatever offense you want to run, 2-minute offense when you just walked out onto the field. Cool, do it. First team offense, first team defense. So never a bad thing.
That's a coach's dream when you can draw up any scenario. This is where the coaching world, we go nuts. We love this. Oh, I can draw up any scenario I want against a different team. I mean, that's coach's world 101 right there. We love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to show your entire bag of tricks, but you can, you know, at least try to figure out what's, you know, what might work against, you know, you run a C team. I don't know much about the Packers offense or defensive schemes, how they compare to any, you know, anyone the Bengals are really going to face this year. But I mean, I'm sure they run some coverages or, you know, have some personnel that's similar so they can see, you know, how to attack that in, you know, in real time to, you know, at least have something to try when the lights turn on for real. Yeah. Again, we haven't been here in 2 weeks, and that's pretty much the extent of all the news going on right now. We are in the dead period right now, just a handful of off-season workouts. There's a couple NFL-wide signings that trickle in, things like that. There is a big name that got released because the Cardinals are just on full tank mode. DeAndre Hopkins. You couldn't find somebody to take to trade you anything of value for a very good, older but very good wide receiver?
Nah, I mean, I just think the NFL is at the prime of receiver land. I mean, there's more great receivers now than ever before. So I think the premium on a guy like D-Hop, when it seems like every single year there's not just a noteworthy player that you can get in the draft, there's multiple. It seems like every year, just with the way football is turning. So I think giving up capital for a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, I don't think anybody was over eager to do that.
I guess it was a matter of how much money they were willing to eat to actually get any draft picks or anything like that. Where do you think he's going to end up? I mean, you hear the names coming out, and they are teams that the Bengals are very familiar with. The Browns have been linked to him because played with Deshaun Watson. Chiefs have been linked to him. Bills have been linked to him. Where do you think his best fit is, and where do you think he might end up?
I think the two for me that I think he might end up at that seem right to me is Buffalo and Dallas. I think Dallas, for the reason of it's Jerry Jones, and if somebody's going to make a splash, Jerry Jones is that guy. I think Buffalo, because Buffalo's got to be getting to a point where they're kind of tired of playing second and now third fiddle, right? So they lost to Kansas City, and I think going into a couple years ago, everybody was said, you know, it's their time now. It's now they've been to the game. They've lost the big game. Now it's their time to kind of roll on. And then all of a sudden, here come these sneaky little Bengals. And, you know, the Bills have been put on the back burner now for a couple straight years. So I could see them making that move just out of, I don't want to say desperation, because they're a really good football team. But I do feel like they want to take that next step. And if they don't, do people start to get fired? You know, I mean, they're at that point where you have to win something, or people are looking at the head coach like, all right, well, how long are we going to do this? Because what we're doing right now is not working. So I think the Bills make a lot of sense to me. Best fit for me is probably the two that I don't want to see him go to, which would be Kansas City and Baltimore. I feel like both of those are pretty good fits for him.
You think even Baltimore, with everyone that they've added, draft picks, and with Odell Beckham, you think there's still room for?
That's up to the Ravens, but yeah, true. I don't know that you're asking me, like, as far as OBJ, I kind of throw that out the window. The guy's been a 450-yard receiver for the last 4 years. Yeah. So, you know, if I'm not looking at cap numbers and I'm not looking at what they want to do, I'm just looking for best fit. I think he becomes the Ravens number one right now. And OBJ would probably fall to three or four. If I was in charge. So I still think he fits well with the Ravens, but I'm not necessarily saying that they'll want to do that. But I think he would fit really well there because I think he would give them a legitimate number one, which I don't believe OBJ is a legitimate number one.
Yeah, I mean, it's the problem if the Ravens roll out with Hopkins and Odell Beckham, you're getting two guys that are on the wrong side of 30 that have both not played a lot of football. I'm trying to see the exact amount of games that Hopkins has missed the last 2 years, but I mean, it's significant. He's missed significant time. And Beckham didn't play at all last year, and he's always got something nagging. I don't know what he's going to bring. Like, the guy's got fantastic hands, but again, when you're looking at someone who's that age, I mean, receivers slow down. I mean, he turns 31 next week, I think a week from yesterday. Do you know what you're not getting DeAndre Hopkins from a couple years ago? Because again, I mean, you can't expect that. And unless you're going to like Kansas City,
right?
You're probably not going to a place with a. I mean, what are you getting? You know, if you pair him up in Cleveland, where is you're trying to recreate magic from several years ago, and that's not the same Deshaun Watson. That's not the same, you know, DeAndre. Like I don't know what – there's a lot of people out there that are looking for him that I think are expecting him to be the DeAndre Hopkins from, what, 2018 when he had 1,500 yards and 11 touchdowns. I mean, that guy's gone. Mm-hmm. Maybe you get 1,000. You know, I see him as a number two, number three. Just curious, but I don't really have a good guess as to where he's going to end up. I think Dallas probably makes sense as a good guess because, yeah, Jerry Jones likes – to sign names more than he does fits and players.
Yeah.
But we'll see. It's interesting. I mean, it's not a lot of competition on the market for him. So he's, you know, he's got the market all to himself for guys that missed out on guys during the draft or missed out on guys during the first couple waves of free agency. So be interesting.
I've heard people talk Cleveland. I just think that would be a horrible move, but also an ultimate, you know, typical Cleveland move. But yeah, if you're Deshaun Watson and the Browns, your goal has to be to get as far away from anything that went on in Houston. You know, now that we're a year removed from it, it's just going to be easier and easier, less questions. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah. Why would you bring him in? And then that just rekindles the fire of every reporter of Houston. You know, if I was Cleveland, I'd stay as far away from that one as I could.
But they're also desperate.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason they just gave him $250 million guaranteed. I mean, I put nothing by them. But if it was me personally and I'm Cleveland, I'm like, no, it's off the table.
Yeah, I mean, you short of a few spots, I mean, Cleveland still has just a fantastic roster.
They do.
And they have literally nothing to show for it. And they, you know, they almost, I mean, Watson was very much pushing chips to the table. And, I mean, at this point, you just double down and, well, you know, let's, you know, what else? I mean, we've already kind of restructured this contract to free up a ton of money. So let's, you know, I can see that, but yeah, I think it would be a train wreck. Although Browns fans are already saying that Hopkins, Elijah Moore, and Amari Cooper are going to be the best 1-2-3 punch in the NFL.
Oh, that was, like, I needed a good laugh today. Thank you.
You're the third best wide receiving trio in the state. I'd put Ohio State's receivers, Marvin Harrison Jr. and everyone else, you know, above those guys. I mean, that's not a bad receiver core, but let's slow our rolls a little bit here.
Yeah, bump the brakes. Bump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, let's settle down, folks. Do you like the college kickoff rule that was in play before this year? Because now it is in play in the NFL.
No, I do not. I do not like it. I mean, for me, the NFL, you got your chance by moving the ball up to the 35 for kickoffs, which was more than enough to be able to develop a kicker. If you never want to have to cover kickoff, you can easily do that. And that reduced injuries. So you not only, you know, it did everything the NFL wanted to do, and now you want to add more to it. It's similar to baseball, putting the pitch clock in, and then also you know, shortening the pitch clock by 5 seconds every single time for each season. I mean, if you did your deed. You saved 20 minutes of game time. There's no reason to add more onto this. I despise this rule.
Yeah, for those that aren't aware of it, in college football, any kickoff, you can fair catch a kickoff, and if it's anywhere between the 25-yard line and the goal line, you receive the ball at the 25-yard line. Just do away with kickoffs. Like, if this is the end result that you don't want contact, just take the ball. Okay, you score or end a half, and, you know, begin the game, just take the ball at the 25 and just start it from there. It's boring. Like, just watching kickoff after kickoff sail through the end zone. It's dumb. It's pointless. There's zero watch. Like, it's just throw another 30-second commercial on because it's useless. Now, fair catching kickoffs, I think it's just dumb rule. Just return the kick, or again, just elect to take it to the 25. Boom, problem solved. The NFL is still, like, again, you try to take out as many injuries as possible that can be prevented by rule changes. You know, by you know, they've put in a lot of rules. I mean, over the top, put in rules to protect quarterbacks. Because again, those are the guys who make the teams go, and those are the team guys that make all the money and make the TV guys money. And you don't want those guys missing out, but football is still a contact sport. There's going to be injuries, and guys get injured on non-contact plays. You can't legislate every injury out. And special teams, yeah, there was an overwhelming amount of injuries there, but you fixed it by moving the kickoffs to the 35. So yeah, again, why are we doubling down and just making it? I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of injuries that have gone down in football, like you said, to the quarterbacks. Yeah. They're, you know, you'll see one quarterback a year, two, you know, a freak injury happens and they get hurt. But I mean, quarterback injuries are way down. I would think wide receiver injuries have to be way down. When you cross the middle, you don't get lit up anymore. I mean, you get nestled to the ground. Yeah. The injuries have gone way down, and now we're taking it into overdrive. And, you know, I want to still have football when I'm 40. This rate, you know, it's getting sketchy.
When you're 40, shut up. I'd have to go back. I'd have to turn the clock back about 3 years. If we're really that concerned about trying to legislate all these injuries out, then just ban all artificial turf. Like, that's the number one culprit for injuries. And even on special teams plays, like, that's, you know, players getting their legs caught up in turf, and, you know, and blowing ACLs on, you know, because there's so many collisions going on. That's, again, if you really want to get rid of injuries, if you really want to make the game safer, then yeah, get rid of artificial turf, or work on making a safer helmet so the concussions go down. You can put the protocol in as much as you want, but people are still going to get concussions because people are bigger, faster, stronger than ever before, and you're still having to, you know, and let's not put any stupid superficial things that just make the game less entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and the other piece of it is, the other, you know, good part of it is that the way, you know, we talk about concussions a lot, and yes, they've gone down, but the way we handle concussions too. I mean, if you're remotely close to even think about somebody might have a concussion, guess what? I mean, the NFL, the trainer's going to stop it. The coach, the referee, the NFL. I mean, the game's not going to continue until that guy gets looked at. So there's nobody that's going back into a game after, you know, they black out for 5 seconds and come back too. And that tough guy that says, "Oh, I'm good, I'm going to go again." No, yeah. that doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, just even the way we treat concussions is completely different. And it's a different, you know, recovery. Where those guys were getting two and three concussions in a game, you know, at times. That doesn't happen anymore. So,
I mean, unless your name's Tua.
Yeah, well, that's but I mean, that's the exception, not the rule. I mean, just that's you know, so I just think that, you know, we've made all this progress, and now, you know, I'm great with continued progress, but you have to weigh pros and cons. And right now, I just don't know that they're doing that equal, fair justice.
Yeah, you still want to have a watchable product. I mean, if no one's going to watch it, you know, again, these guys aren't gladiators out there, you know, in this arena. It's a sport, you know, that's just a contact sport. So, you know, perspective, but just want an entertaining product. Speaking of entertaining product, Amazon really hated the lack of entertaining products it had on Thursday Night Football. They had a lot of stinkers. Jets Jaguars game, it was Jaguars won 19-3. Good job, Jets. Way to show up for a primetime showdown. So now the league is allowing them to flex Thursday night games. You have to give at least 28 days notice. This is the dumbest goddamn thing I think I have heard about, because nobody gives a damn about fans. The amount of travel, I mean, football being a one-day-a-week sport, fans travel out of town. Like, they set these, you know, that's why schedule release day is such a gigantic, you know, the manufactured event. But, I mean, it's still an event. People that travel, you know, that follow their teams around. You get hotel rooms. You know, you get plane tickets, all stuff like that. And now it's one thing if you're moving a game from a Saturday or Sunday afternoon to a Sunday night. That's an inconvenience. It's dumb. But I at least get it. It's, you know, you have a 1 o'clock PM start and it's moved back to what time Sunday night kickoffs? 8:15
or something like that.
Yeah. And it's moved back 7 hours. Great. You're going to go to bed a bit later, but it's not a huge deal. Even if you're traveling, chances are you're not flying, you know, that's not a huge deal, but you're talking 3 days and like, just again, it's screwing fans out. Sorry, Amazon, you got stuck with a bunch of crappy games. People are still watching the game. You know, I don't know. Again, for a league that talks about safety and wanting to be safety, and again, now we're moving around teams. Like, I hate Thursday Night Football to begin with. I think you should only be playing Thursday Night Football games if you're weak, if you have a bye week preceding it, so that you're not doubling back in four games, so you've got time to rehab all those bumps and bruises, so you're not causing a bigger issue, but. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
The NFL is not about safety.
Yeah,
it's about CY, cover your ass. I mean, the NFL, none of this stuff is about safety. Do you think the NFL, if you're going to be, you know, blunt about it and be cut and dry, do you think the NFL really cared about concussions if they weren't getting sued for billions of dollars? And the answer is no. They would have continued to run guys out there and not care at all. It's a billion-dollar lawsuit that changes the way they operate. And, right. You know, it is what it is. They're a big enterprise. But if you think that they care about safety, if that was the case, instead of putting in this fair catch rule, we would have no Thursday football.
Yeah.
Thursday football is dangerous as all get out. You're playing an NFL game 4 days after playing an NFL game when, you know, they've done studies, and basically playing an NFL game is like being in two or three car crashes. And right. then – for one game, and then you're going to come back 4 days later and you're going to drive around the track again and get in three more car accidents. I mean, there's no way you can explain that to me where that's the safest, most conducive environment for safe football. That's just not real. So again, you can see the money tells all. If they have a $1 billion lawsuit, they'll make it safer. If they have Amazon and a $1 billion account, they'll move it to Thursdays. They'll flex out Thursdays. The NFL is going to do whatever it can do. If there's another nickel somewhere, they'll find it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Right on. It's just dumb. The product, I mean, there's a reason that why a lot of those matchups on Thursday nights weren't great, because they really didn't want their marquee teams and players playing on Thursday nights, because you don't want Pat Mahomes, Joe Burrow, you know, Tom Brady, getting hurt because he was banged up a little bit on Saturday or on Sunday. Then he goes back out 4 days later and tears something. You know what I mean? It's dumb. It's too much. I mean, we're going to have Saturday games year round here soon. I guarantee they're going to be Friday games coming soon. Just maximize that window, more days to put more eyeballs. And I love football. Obviously I wouldn't be doing this, but it's too much. It's just trying to take over every single day, every single viewing window. NFL wants every single one.
I'd be much better if they went to a Saturday, Sunday. And of course you have your Monday night football. But if you had just Saturday and Sunday, the argument for safety there makes perfect sense. You know, Saturday and Sunday, if they want to split the slate Saturday and Sunday and compete with college football, I would have no problem with that. I think 6 days off in between a game is plenty. I think that's very fair. And then you're going to get 8 days off on the next one, you know, because you're playing on Sunday the following week. I think it makes that would make way more sense than this Thursday Thursday madness. I mean, so you can go from playing on a Sunday. Let's say you're the Bengals. You're at home on Sunday, and then you got to fly to wherever. You got to fly to Minnesota next week. So you get done playing Sunday at 4 o'clock. You get dinner. You have whatever. You meet Monday. You have a team meeting. Are you flying out immediately? I mean, it's just,
yeah,
it's such a tough turnaround. I just don't like that. Saturday, Sunday would make a lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, besides actual getting actual game planning and field time, besides walkthroughs, you need treatment for these. You need treatment for injuries.
Well,
again, or if someone gets you know the least bit dinged up to where they have to come out of the game on Sunday, there's probably a 75% chance that guy's going to sit on the Thursday game because you know they're going to want him rested up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it just leads to a bad product.
Yeah. So anyway, enough about NFL being greedy, et cetera, yada yada. On to the topic of the week. Bengals have released their Ring of Honor nominations. Two of these guys, again, they'll join the inaugural class and the class last year. Two of these 13 names are voted on by season ticket holders and will be enshrined in, I don't think they announced the actual game where the Ring of Honor is going to be, where they're going to actually do the Ring of Honor ceremony, but it'll be a primetime home game. That'll be the white out with the white helmets and everything. So, I'll quickly run through the 13 names here. Give a brief little for those that may not be aware of these older guys. First, Jim Breach, the Bengals all-time leading scorer with 1,151 points. He was in line to become the first kicker to win Super Bowl MVP in Super Bowl 23 before that jackass Joe Montana drove him 92 yards. And yeah, we know. Yeah, exactly. regardless, Breach was a long time. He's still a fixture in the community. Does a ton of charity work. Again, he'll get in eventually, I think, one way or the other, into the Ring of Honor. Next, James Brooks, who was the best all-purpose back in Cincinnati Bengals history, holds the team record for most total yards from scrimmage, 9,459. An absolute dual threat stud. He ran routes with the crispness of a receiver. Tiny guy. He was 5'10", 180 pounds, but he had, of course, back in the 80s, they all had shoulder pads that made them look like they weighed 250 pounds. But I mean, he'd take on linebackers and try to run them over. Just the guy that was five times the size, you know, heart five times the size of his body. Chris Collinsworth, I think people might have heard of that guy. He actually recorded the first 1,000 yard receiving season in Bengals history as a rookie. Played his career bookended the two Super Bowls. His rookie year was 81, and his final year was 88. And also a very loudmouth, yet 16-time Emmy award-winning broadcaster. He's got a lot of intelligent things to say, and he is the man behind Pro Football Focus, which just I love Pro Football Focus. I know they're not the authority for everything, but it's they do a good job of just trying to quantify things that aren't easily quantifiable. He's still obnoxious as hell and sometimes needs to shut up, but Emmy voters like him enough to give him a lot of awards.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Next on the list is probably the best running back I have ever seen for an extended period of time, at least, you know, for my team, Corey Dillon. Most rushing yards in team history. Set rookie and league rushing yards or rookie and league record for most rushing yards in a single game. He owns the top three single game rushing totals in Bengals team history. Funny, we were talking about Thursday night games. His rookie year, 1997, that was my senior year. They played a Thursday nighter against Tennessee. They were still the Oilers, but I think it was Tennessee Oilers before they became the Titans. And a bunch of friends and I, we just went out and played basketball, and driving back, I just flip on the radio and hear him talking about like the score and like, or and the record and the yards like that. I'm like, what in the world happened? And then you hear he ran for 246 yards against what was a pretty decent team at the time, or, you know, the defense was pretty decent defense. And you're like, wow, this guy is legit. And again, in 2000 ran for 278 against the Broncos. Same thing. I'm driving back from, was driving from Ohio University out in Athens, and 2000 Bengals, terrible. I really didn't want to listen to them. I had my girlfriend, now wife, in the car with me. She didn't want to listen to a Bengals game. She fell asleep in the car, so I flipped it on at the end, and I hear him talking about this historic day. I'm like, oh, good Lord, they lost by 70 points. And no, he ran for 278. Bengals ran for 400 yards as a team. And you're like, whoa. So, I mean, he was as big and fast and strong as a running back could have been. I don't know. Do you get a chance to watch him too much? I know you're a little bit younger. Not a lot younger, but a little bit younger than me. Did you get a chance to appreciate Dylan?
Oh, I loved, absolutely loved Corey Dillon. Might have been the first, maybe the second Bengals player that I fell in love with Carl Pickens probably being number one.
Those two have a couple other things in common.
Yeah.
Not a lot of love for the organization as a whole. Next one is probably one of the most famous ex-Bengals. Boomer Esiason, blonde bomber, won the 1988 NFL MVP, won the passing title that year, led the team to the Super Bowl. Everyone remembers him coming back in 1997 and salvaging the season and just having this amazing kind of rebirth, and then he hung him up. Again, and he's been broadcasting probably 25 years now, which is amazing. But again, he was the quarterback of my youth. Left-handed too. Got to love all my my fellow left-handers. And that was my dude growing up. Another one of my dudes, David Fulcher, safety. The guy was a freak. 6'3", 235 pounds as a strong safety. Played the run like a linebacker, covered like a cornerback, and hit like a Mack truck. I mean, he's bigger than most linebackers that are out right now.
Yeah, that's huge.
I don't know. Jermaine Pratt's probably the only linebacker that the Bengals have that's bigger than him, right? Pratt's like 245, 250.
Yeah, but I would wonder what Logan Wilson weighs. It's probably – he probably weighs close.
In that same range.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, this guy was a safety and still covered. You know, I mean, he could cover tight ends. I mean, he could cover the slot.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That guy was a weapon. Absolutely.
I never knew. I didn't know he was that big before before you had that listed on here. I never realized that. He was a little bit before my time.
Yeah, go look up video and watch video of him. And just, again, in 80s, shoulder pads were hilariously oversized. But yeah, I mean,
we called him the elephant ears because we still had him when I was in high school. The elephant ears, just big old elephant ears there.
Yeah, and he was just intimidating. Just that guy just over the middle, you know, coming across the middle of the field when the rules were a little more relaxed and you could put a little hot sauce on your hits into the
little different time then.
Yeah. Next is Chad Johnson. And I mean, he's pretty ubiquitous. You really don't need to say much about him, but I mean, he's the team leader or in history, most receiving yards, most receiving touchdowns, receptions, and probably the biggest personality that this team has ever had. He made being a people of my age. I mean, he was drafted in 2001. I turned 21 right before that season started and had gone through a decade of just embarrassment. He made it cool to be a Bengals fan again. I got season tickets during that time frame. His act wore on people because, again, he was very lighthearted, but a lot of me. But, again, someone, you know, who's of that age, you know, I mean, it was just awesome to see that guy that just took, like, he got that huge of exposure. I mean, he brought a lot of national exposure to the Bengals and they came on. And that's when they came on and were like, you know, in the early Marvin years. I mean, it's kind of helped with the rebirth of the franchise. So again, he's special place, you know, that era of Bengals, you know, special place. Again, he kind of wore out his welcome, but, you know, his act wore thin, but guy was a fantastic receiver. Next, Tim Krumrie, never missed a game due to injury in his career, which is crazy. Defensive tackle, led the team in tackles 5 times as a defensive tackle. Can you imagine that? Could you imagine DJ Reader or BJ Hill leading the Bengals in tackles?
No, that's like legitimately one of the most unbelievable things I've ever heard. To lead the team in tackles, a defensive tackle?
100 plus tackles.
That's amazing. That is truly amazing.
Yeah, I think it was 84 to 88. He led them every year. A little bit of an undersized defensive tackle. And they ran a 3-4, and he was a nose tackle. But, I mean, it had the gruesome, awful broken leg in second quarter of the Super Bowl. And that was one of those – again, I was – I was eight when that happened, and you don't understand like how big of an impact it is. But looking back, you could see it go either two ways. The team's going to kind of galvanize around that moment, or it's, you know, it's what's going to make the team crumble. Because I mean, that guy was their heart and soul. He tried to come back out on the field. Like, he didn't want to come off the field with a nasty compound fracture, but it's like, you need to stay in the locker room and get some treatment, buddy. Two-time Pro Bowler. I mean, he was just a damn good player. Next, Dave Lapham. This guy is Mr. Bengal to me. Twice, the two separate games, he played all five offensive line positions in the same game, which is, I mean, it's rare. I mean, you don't often see people having to move positions. You know, it's one thing maybe move left tackle to right tackle because of injury, but then also play left guard, right guard, and center in the same game because of injuries and shuffles. I mean, he was just versatile. He was a Swiss Army knife. Good player. Again, he was just a long-time player. But after he retired, I mean, obviously, he's the voice of the Bengals. I mean, he's the Bengals. He's the team's answer to Joe Nuxhall on the Reds. Mm-hmm. Just that voice, like, that person is ubiquitous to the organization. His playing career is only a small bit of who the person is. Next on the list, Max Montoya, three-time Pro Bowler, played in both Super Bowls for the Bengals. He was Anthony Munoz's cohort on the offensive line for that entire time. Just nasty, nasty offensive guard. Probably the best guard in team history. His departure after 90 or 91 in free agency, that signaled the dark decade of the 90s. That's when the Bengals didn't understand how free agency worked, let someone of that ability go, and ushered in just a lot of sadness in the city.
We do need to add in, didn't he invent Penn Station, or he was the owner of it, or created Penn Station? Is that him?
I don't know. I'll have to look that up. I know I've seen his signature. Like, all the Penn Stations have wall of signatures of, you know, local celebrities and everything, but that I'm not sure. I'm actually having to look that up as we speak, because we are well prepared. After retiring from the NFL, Montoya invested in a restaurant, Penn Station East Coast Subs, and owned four outright. So, okay, there we go. Yeah. I know Penn Station's based in Milford, you know, where I grew up.
But, okay. Yeah. And Penn Station's phenomenal. Can't hate on some Penn Station.
Greasy as hell, but man, that's good shit.
It is. It is good stuff. No doubt about it.
Make sure you're not wearing any good clothes, because you're going to make a mess. next up, cornerback Lamar Parrish, six-time Pro Bowler. In his Bengals career, he returned four punts, four interceptions, three fumbles, and a kickoff for touchdowns in his tenure with the team. 18.8 punts or yards per return on punt returns in 1974 is the best in league history post-merger. That's crazy. I mean, 18. I mean, that's almost 20 yards you're picking up on a punt. You figure, what's a good gross punt? You know, 47 yards, and you're picking up 19 yards, so you're netting 28 yards.
Oh, if your punt return average, if you net anything 8 yards and above, I mean, you're absolutely killing it, and that's averaging eight or above. I mean, that's, you're eliminating a whole first down your offense has to get. 18 is a phenomenal number.
Well, and punters didn't kick it that, like, they didn't have the legs that they have now. So you figure, I mean, how many times did they dissuade guys from punting? I mean, how many times did the other team go for it, knowing that they're only going to, you know, that they're only going to flip the field 20 yards if, you know, if, I mean, that's absolutely crazy. I mean, he was fantastic, overshadowed by Ken Riley. And yeah, I mean, Ken Riley was the better player, was a longer player, but a fantastic cornerback in his own right. Next up, Bob Trumpy. He was one of the original Bengals. He was drafted in their first draft class in 1968. Four-time Pro Bowler, averaged as a tight end 22.6 yards per catch in 1969. That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. Caught the first touchdown pass in team history, and then became a staple, like pretty much invented, but created the institution of sports talk radio in Cincinnati after, you know, after his playing days, and then, you know, went on with NBC and broadcast. And again, he's another guy with a gigantic big mouth, similar to Collinsworth, but again, just perfect as a figure, as a Cincinnati figure, is huge, you know, that has a huge presence here and still does, even as, I mean, he's got to be getting close to his 80s. I know Joe Namath just turned 80 today, so he can't be too far from there. Last, certainly not least, Reggie Williams played for the Bengals for 14 years, played in both Super Bowls, was a solid, absolute solid linebacker, probably the most, probably the best linebacker all told in team history. Was a better person than a player. This is just in 3 years, 4 years. He won the Wizzer White Award for humanitarian work in 1985. In 1986 was the NFL Man of the Year for his philanthropic work. 1987, Sports Illustrated Co-Sportsman of the Year. 1988, elected to Cincinnati City Council while he was an active player. 1990, he was awarded honorary Doctor of Laws from Dartmouth University. He's one of them smart Ivy League guys that Mike Brown and the Browns always love. He helped after his playing career was done. He went to go work for Disney. Helped them start the Wide World of Sports complex out of Disney World in Florida. Just a fantastic individual. And again, like his as good of a player as he was a better person and leaves a bigger. Say leaves. He hasn't left us, but has an outsized presence, you know, even bigger than his impact on the football field. Who are your two picks? If you get picks,
I had two picks, but then this Reggie Williams guy, I'm hearing everything he did. He just reminds me of myself a lot, just getting a lot done here, you know? I wish, my goodness, that's quite the resume. But my two picks there was a couple guys that I thought about, you know, that I would have taken, Corey Dillon being one, but I just don't like, you know, the relationship between him and the Bengals. If I'm going to put somebody in my ring of honor, I want it to be somebody that's a true Bengal, you know? So I loved Corey Dillon, didn't always love the attitude, you know, that necessarily came with it. And so the two I went with are guys that were in my childhood and kind of just enjoyed every minute of it. So I went with, Of course, Ocho Cinco. He was the greatest thing ever. And you were talking earlier that people soured on him because he was a me guy, which, you know, he to me, I don't see him like that. I see him as he looked like a me guy. But in reality, he was the hardest working guy on the team. And he's the guy that showed up every game and dominated. It wasn't like, you know, he just showed up and didn't put in any work on the side. Right. That guy worked as hard as anybody. So I understand people think he was a me guy, but the me guy doesn't put in work to make the team better. And Chad Johnson did all of that. I never had a single issue with him. I thought he was the greatest thing ever. And he changed the way he made you want to watch a 5-11 Bengals team just because you had no idea what the celebration was going to be. You know, it's the week of, you know, the Open Championship or something. So he does putt. I mean, the guy's amazing. He was incredible, and he was awesome for the Bengals organization. And I would say, you know, really even better for the fans. We needed that at that time. After the 90s and early we were ready. We needed Ocho Cinco. Maybe we needed him more than he needed us because we needed him. So I would say Ocho Cinco. And then my second one was a guy that I just absolutely love. I really didn't get to see him watch him play that much, but I know he was a stud. And that's Boomer Esiason. He's a true Bengal through and through. He's had the Bengals back even after he's left. I mean, anytime they go through these picks, AFC Championship every year, it's everybody picks the Chiefs except for Boomer Esiason, who picks the Bengals. So he's won a place in my heart for that. So I'm going with two guys that love the Bengals and the Bengals love them. And that is Ocho Cinco and Boomer Esiason.
Yeah. I mean, Boomer has been fair. He's been critical of the Bengals, but it's his criticism of them has been kind of having the fans back at, you know, not being mean, just all this team sucks, blah, 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 blah. But it's been more pointed criticism, you know, that's that's fair, and it's been fair enough to where the team, I think, respects, you know, even when, you know, even during the dark, that, you know, that he's a voice that they would listen to and respect out there. I have no complaints with either of the guys you picked. Again, I mean, Chad Johnson was fantastic. Again, just entertaining as hell. And I think the only reason that the act kind of wore thin was the team was late 2000s. That team was phasing out, and they'd underachieved. And Carson Palmer and, you know, Hushmanzada and those guys were just kind of that addition of the Bengals had kind of just worn itself out, and people were just, okay, we, you know, it's time to move on. The guy just made some absolutely amazing catches. Just the way he could contort his body to stay in bounds, drag his feet. I mean, he was phenomenal. And yeah, I mean, Boomer was he probably the best leader that the team has ever had in a locker room. I mean, this is a guy that he could get 52 other guys to follow him into battle, no matter what the odds are stacked against him. Zero complaints with them. My guys I chose are guys that I'm concerned might, I don't say slip through, but it really depends on the voting age of those that are actually, you know, on younger people that are, you know, season ticket holders than were 20 years ago when I had season tickets. I picked Lamar Parrish. He was Deion Sanders before Deion Sanders. He was a flashy dresser, you know, especially in the 70s. You see some of those god awful polyester suits and, you know, crazy. I mean, just look up some of the pictures of Lamar Parrish. He flamboyantly dressed, and then just the ability. I mean, they had to throw it his way sometime because you had Ken Riley on the other side, so they couldn't totally avoid him like Deion. But again, their return ability. I mean, 12 returns of four different, you know, fumble, punt, kick, intercept, you know, absolutely just dynamic with the ball in his hands. It would have been fun if they kind of would have been creative and thrown him on the other side of the ball. Throw him some gadget plays. You got Isaac Curtis, you know, Isaac Curtis keeping the safeties. You know, that would have been a little fun to see them be a little creative, but not, you know, those days they were a little more buttoned up. And then Dave Lapham. You can't tell the story of the Bengals without Dave Lapham. Again, it's his playing career was fine. Again, like he was a stalwart. He wasn't a star. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't this all pro. He was just a damn good, useful piece for the team for a long time. And just the ambassador. I mean, he is the franchise ambassador. He's been part of the organization for probably 85% of the time. 45 of the last 47 years, he was in the USFL, tried to switch over to the USFL in the mid 80s. And the rest of the time he's either been on the roster or in the broadcast booth. And again, he's just, you hear him yelling over top of Dan Hoard. Dan Hoard's trying to make the call. And you hear Dave's voice yelling in over the top, you know, on all these huge plays. That's hilarious. And it's crazy. And sometimes like, shut the hell up. I want to hear what's going on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But no one is more enthusiastic. Nobody's a bigger Bengals personality than Lapp. So those are my two guys. And again, I think all of the guys that are, you know, during our lifetimes, Corey Dillon's going to get in. It would be great to see them have the ice has thawed between the two because after everything that's gone on. I think it would be awesome when he gets, because he'll get voted in at some point, but if it's not this year, it'll be next year. And yeah, just to see him mend the fence. I mean, that's another guy. You can't tell the story of the Bengals without telling like just how talented and how fantastic of a football player that Corey Dillon was. Again, a lot of these other guys, they'll get in eventually. But I think, again, because we're still working on the backload or, you know, the backlog of players from earlier in the early days of the Bengals. Guys with the, you know, guys that had the Bengals on the side of their helmet instead of the stripes. So that's why, that's why I went with Parrish and Lapp.
Yeah, I love the Lapp pick. I almost picked it myself. I love Lapp. Like you said about his announcing, it's different. Like, so if you go to announcing, like to go get your degree in announcing, everything he does would be the opposite of what they teach you on how to be the color guy as an announcer. Yeah. But he's ours and he does it I don't think he tries to be anything other than exactly who he is, and we love him for it. So I think he's phenomenal, and I like the fact that, to me, him and Boomer are kind of the same. They're going to tell you exactly how it is, and they're not going to lie to you. I mean, they're just being genuinely exactly who they are, and they're not trying to put on a show because they're announcing. I love Lapp. I love the way he announces.
And it's funny because he went to Syracuse, and Syracuse is the biggest school for broadcasting in the country by far. I mean, so many people have come through there. Mike Tirico, Sean McDonough, Dan Horde went to Syracuse for a broadcasting career, and he graduated from there. Dave Lapham is an incredibly intelligent man. I mean, he had Ivy League scholarship offers when he was coming out. I mean, he went to a prep school in Massachusetts. He just went to Syracuse because, like, you know, better opportunities for football, but you hear him just yelling over the top of these plays. Like, did you not take one class? You went to the best broadcasting school in the country. Did you not go to one communications class or something, or like the public speaking class? I took those at UC, and UC isn't quite the broadcasting school that Syracuse is. And it's sometimes, like, even cringeworthy. Like, I just want to hear the play-by-play, but it's the enthusiasm and the passion that he has. I mean, it's corny sometimes, but it's also fantastic. Have you ever watched any of his podcasts that he has, In the Trenches?
I've seen some clips of them, but I don't know that I've ever seen an entire episode, like, all the way through, but I've definitely seen clips up In the Trenches.
Same. I mean, and it's fantastic. It's great just to listen to him talk. I mean, again, this isn't specific Bengals, just his enthusiasm and knowledge of the game of football. And it's primarily, you know, that most of that is geared towards offensive, defensive, you know, linemen and things like that. But it's fun to see somebody that even, at, you know, he's 70 years old, but still loves what they do, still loves every bit about it. I mean, his son is in broadcasting now. I mean, it's, you know,
yeah,
it's a family thing. And it's just, it's cool to see.
Yeah, so actually him and his son actually announced one of our high school, when I was in high school, way back in the day.
Oh, wow.
We were on FSN Ohio. And so it was him, and his son was actually the sideline reporter.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool, you know, for high school kids being on FSN Ohio. We thought we were the greatest thing since sliced bread. But yeah, we enjoyed that moment.
So you're going with Boomer and Ocho. I'm going with Lapp and Parrish. It'll be none of those four because – what's that? Yeah.
I like all those picks. I think we did – we had a very solid – I'll take our four into battle. I think we did very well.
Yeah, I those four are all definitely going to get in. I mean, I only see – the only two names that I think might not get in out of all the guys that are even nominated is maybe Jim Breach because he's a kicker and – maybe Chris Collinsworth, because while he was a good receiver, he wasn't a great receiver. He was overshadowed, and his broadcasting career, I mean, say what you want about it, but it's been more of a national broadcasting career than a local one. Whereas, you know, Trumpy and Lapp, you know, are bigger, more in the community personalities.
I have a question. Serious question. What percentage of Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, Bengals area, let's call it Bengals land, what percentage of that, of those people, despise Chris Collinsworth announcing? Just announcing. We all like him as a person. We like him as a football player. What percentage despises his announcing? I got a number in mind. So go ahead. I want to hear your number.
Over 50%.
I think it's way over.
I'm not going to, because I mean, I don't, maybe there, because I'm not young, but I'm not old, so maybe some of the old-timers appreciate it more, but I know none of the, let's say none, not much of the younger generation cares much for his broadcasting. It's always just, shut up, Chris, let Mike talk.
Yes.
But again, I appreciate that, you know, that he started PFF, and PFF is in over the, you know, it's, they work out of Over the Rhine, and he's invested in a lot of Cincinnati businesses. He's done a lot of charitable work in Cincinnati. Still does Cadillac commercials for whatever reason. Cool.
Yeah.
Great for you. You get a free Cadillac from Camargo Cadillac. But yeah, I think most of the 11 of those guys will end up getting in eventually. I wish they'd allowed more than two. at least yeah, for the next couple years, just to, there's so much of a backlog. I mean, how many players are going to be, how many more players? I mean, Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins, Carson eventually deserves to be there. I think, AJ Green, Andy Dalton, just not even count anyone that's currently on the roster. I mean, those guys are going to be added within the next handful of years of guys that are retired players. And we're still working on guys from the 60s and 70s. So I think they should open it up to more than just two, for at least for a few years.
Yeah. I think they should have had maybe a 2 or 3 year stretch where they could have up to four. You don't necessarily have to put them in there, but something where, like you said, you can get caught up.
Yeah. Have a threshold. I mean, rank choice. I mean, just rank as many, and you have to be on 50% of the, the top four that receive at least 50% of the votes or something like that. They'll get around to it at some point, but I just want these older guys that were great and deserve it to get in again while they're still around. I mean, you've got guys that played in the 60s that are in their seventies and 80s, and you want them to be able to appreciate the honor. So, real quickly before we get out of here, we got a couple bits of viewer mail. First off, from my good friend and your predecessor here alongside with me, Nate Dotson. We all think, and then he know that the Bengals wide receiver trio is the best in the league. In y'all's opinion, because he's from Virginia, and they, even though they're one of the first states, they don't know how to speak American, right? Who are the closest trios in the around the league? Who do you think?
Well, I'm going to tell y'all what I think. Being from Florence, we're throwing y'all in. The Florence y'all, y'all is more than acceptable of a word. Okay, if you look it up on the internet, the Florence Water Tower comes up.
You have y'all's a baseball team named the Florence Y'alls.
Thank you. And that is one of the sickest names in sports. And they have beautiful jerseys, great hats. I mean, I'm telling you, the Y'alls are they're on point. But I would for me, the next best receiving core, if I had to pick one, would be I would go straight down to Miami. And take Waddle and Tyreek.
But who's the third? Both,
huh?
But who's the third?
Whoever their third one is. I don't know.
Is it Sherfield? But I don't think he's there.
Yeah, which he's pretty good. But I just think when you get Waddle and Hill on the same, you have them on the same roster. Yeah. The speed that they have is they both have elite speed, and it just creates so many problems for defenses. If Tua was healthy all year last year, the numbers would have been even crazier. They all got cut short. And I would argue even furthermore that I don't think Tua's – I don't know if he's a top 15 quarterback. And those guys are putting up monster numbers. If Tyreek and Jalen Waddle were with another quarterback that was elite, I mean, my goodness, that would be insanity. I just think those two guys are so good that they don't get the due respect that they should. I just think those guys are super elite.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any love for Tyreek Hill because of his personal history, but he's what John Ross could have been if John Ross didn't get absolutely just killed by Marvin Lewis. I think if you're talking pure trios, we're talking – potential, I got to go with the Seahawks, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Smith and Jigba. But again, he's yet to take the field, but he's going to be fantastic. Chargers are not as high end, but they've got a really good wide receiver room. I mean, Keelan, they're older, but Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, we know what they can do when they're healthy. Quentin Johnson, I know you were not a huge fan of his during draft season. But he's got a lot of ability. And then Joshua Palmer had 800 yards receiving last year. I mean, again, there's a lot of ability when you talk of talent in that room. Now, how many of those guys are going to be, on the field at the same time? Because I mean, it seems like Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are always out, with something nagging for a week, week to week, or missing the games here and there. And Quentin's a rookie. But I think in terms of full rooms, if we're taking aside, not counting the Bengals, I think the Chargers might have the most talented wide receiver room.
Yeah, I'm not big on Quentin Johnson. Obviously, we talked about that with the draft. But for as much as I don't like Quentin Johnson, I I really like Josh Palmer. I think he's a hidden gem. You look at the numbers he's put up as the three, and I know, you know, Keenan Allen and Williams have had some spurts of not being around, but if you gave that guy, you know, here you go, it's your wide receiver room, let's go. I really like Josh Palmer. Really like him.
Yeah, and you know, you got a very pass happy offense with Justin Herbert. So there's plenty of passes to go around there. So it's they're fun offense to watch. I don't get a chance to see them that often.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, because, you know, they're playing the late game and I just don't have the patience to watch teams that I don't have a lot of interest in. But when you do see them, like, it's, you know, when Herbert is, especially when he's on a heater, man, that's a fun, explosive offense.
He can spin it.
He's got the arm talent. What maybe Josh Allen might be the only guy who's got the arm talent than he does. Guy's just gigantic, 6'5", 240, and can just throw the ball so hard and into these absolute tiny windows that maybe Brett Favre in his prime could hit. So, fun team to watch.
Thank God Joe Burrow is the man. Because can you imagine if that, let's say, you know, the Bengals drafted Burrow and for whatever reason he wasn't good. Yeah. Can you imagine where we would be at in Cincinnati, which we pass up on the 6'5", prototypical, just absolute spins it. Thank you, Joey B. Oh, thank you, Joey B. I'm glad that draft pick worked out.
Honestly, I look at Herbert as Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer was that exact same guy, 6'5". I threw the ball, like, just had, like, the absolute beautiful mechanics. Could flick the ball 50, 60 yards, and it looks like he's throwing a, you know, 20-yard out, like, just absolutely just smooth. But, yeah, I would not trade any of those guys. You know, would not trade for any of those guys. I'm happy as hell with Joey B. So,
yeah. Yeah, the Chris Palmer to Chris Henry connection was probably one of the most beautiful things you could ever watch. I mean, it was – Chris Henry never broke stride, and Carson Palmer dropped it right in a bucket. I mean, it was
– yeah.
For the short time we had it, it was a beautiful thing to watch.
You had to bring up those two. Those two were involved in the play when Palmer blew his knee. Henry went out that same play.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That's true.
It happened right in front of me, right in front of the end zone that we were that our seats were in. And, like, I had to poke my brother, like, Carson's on the ground writhing in pain because we're all cheering the 50, 60, or, you know, whatever, however long the pass was. Like, the franchise is writhing in pain on the ground. We got problems.
That was a Super Bowl team. You'll never convince me otherwise. That was the best team in football.
Yeah, that year, I think, yeah, I absolutely think so. Next question from our favorite Canadian, Joey Gaditsa. Who would the starting quarterback be for the Riverfront flag football team? And I don't know how to answer who'd be the quarterback, but I think for the people on the microphones for it, Chad would definitely have to be our GM, right?
Yep.
I think Nate would be the scouting director. That's Chad Dotson, Nate Dotson. He's the one. Those two were dumb enough to put a microphone, you know, in front of me, you know, to give you, put you on the air.
Maybe we should rethink them as talent evaluators. Then,
we didn't say this is a good football team. We just said this is a football team.
Okay. Fair.
Tim would have to be the special teams coordinator, right?
Yep, I'm good with that.
You want the offensive or the defensive side of the ball?
No, I'm good with defense. I'll take defense. Okay. The way you have it set up, to me, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the head coach and offensive coordinator, trying to wear both hats, or maybe I'll have an offensive coordinator and I'll be Zach Taylor and just call the plays regardless. Joey, there's a hell of a lot of quarterbacks with the name of Joseph. We're gonna make you the quarterback. Joe Namath, Joe Montana, Joe Burrow, Joe Theismann, not Joey Harrington. I think other Joes that are
Manziel. Oh, Johnny. What am I thinking? Johnny. Joe Manziel. Johnny Manziel.
Don't throw him in with us. Do not throw him in with us. No, God, no. Yeah, we'll throw the zany Canadian in, Joey, as our quarterback. So we'll have to figure out who the rest of our roster is. For those that don't know, on our I think most of you guys probably also listen to our Reds podcast. Like, anytime we get a new member on our Riverfront Patreon, we assign them beer league softball positions, and we have yet to do that with the football. So we might have to figure out who's going to, you know, who's going to round out our receiving core, who's going to be our offensive line, and you know, who's going to be our long snapper. That's important there. We know from week one last year, long snapper is so much more important than we gave it credit for.
You are not kidding. That one still hurts.
And it had to be to the Steelers. It couldn't have been, you know, a non-divisional game or something that, you know, it could have been the Jets.
The Dallas loss doesn't hurt that bad. You know, like I look back at last year, the Dallas loss, it's like, whatever, you know, we were still getting in the swing of things.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh loss at home, because they're just so, it's just, irritating. They're so unbearable that they think they're good, but really you didn't beat us. We just had no long snapper. Joey B's coming off appendicitis. We would have beat you by 100. And now you guys want to talk smack that you're the Burrow Slay. It's just, don't get me started. I don't want to. I'm going to lose it. It's infuriating.
And undefeated, they were 11 in 2021. They were 11 in, or 2020. They were 11-0 at one point, and they ended up losing to Ryan Finley on Monday Night Football.
Yes.
So.
Which was awesome, by the way.
I didn't get to watch that game. I was out working, and it was one of those, like, you're trekking and you're checking the score and you're like, wait, is this right? Ryan Finley, like, not even Brandon Allen, our backup quarterback, is out. GD Finley.
Yeah. I believe that was the game where they had the greatest picture of all time when he slid for a first down and he's got that smile, that shit-eating grin that looked like he just, it was like a kid that got his whole bag full of candy on Halloween. I mean, he was happier than you could ever be. It was the greatest picture ever.
He looked like an absolute, like, 8-year-old little boy. Football, like, cradled on his side. Yeah. It was just goofy ass.
It was fantastic.
What the hell, man?
So, a little bit creepy, but it was awesome.
That also was the game that brought us our favorite Von Bell moment when laid the leather to TikTok star Juju Smith-Schuster across the middle.
So yeah, that was awesome.
That was the statement that this, you know, this record, this might be an ugly record, but this isn't the same Bengals. This isn't Marvin Lewis's Bengals team. So,
well, and I think the entire, it kind of felt like we were almost like the New York Yankees playing on, like, you know, after like 9/11 or like Memorial Day or something, you know, like where New York gets all that. The Bengals kind of felt like the whole nation was behind him when he laid out Juju. Because I don't think anybody likes Juju, you know. So it was like, you know, you would get a Chargers fan come up to you and be like, oh, man, that was awesome when he laid out Juju. So it was good that we had everybody else's support behind that one, too.
Exactly. I think we've run about long enough. We've had nothing to talk about, yet still managed to run almost an hour and 15 minutes. You got any final thoughts before we boogie out of here, Greg?
Final thoughts is I've been hearing a lot of rumors for Ellie De La Cruz on Friday. Please let it be true. Reds are 3 games out of first. That's 3 games. 3. Yeah. 3 games out of first. Playing well. 1-4 in a row. Let's bring Ellie up. Let's go ahead and throw all of our eggs, push all our chips into the middle of the table, and let's see what's up. This is a horrible NL Central. You're 3 games out. I think you have the possibilities.
Well, and no one's advocating like going and trading any prospects to go get, you know, pitching or, you know, anything like that. This is just bringing up someone who's part of your future, bringing them up maybe a couple weeks before, you know, before you plan on it. But guy's absolutely, I mean, he's a human highlight reel. He's a mutant, hits the ball harder than pretty much anybody in baseball, not named Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton, throws the ball harder across the infield than anybody. Only 2 guys run faster on the bases than he does in all of baseball. This is one player that does all these things. I mean, he's a video game cheat code. He's putting it on rookie mode and then putting your player stats all the way up to 99. And that's living, breathing 6'5" shortstop. That's, you know, it's, he can't, I don't think there's any way he can live up to the hype, but he's going to live up to the hype, if that makes sense. Like he's built up this hero legend before, you know, and he's still only 21 years old and he can't possibly live up to it unless he does. So, you know,
and the Reds are fun. They're electric. They're fun to watch, even though they're, what are they? 3-4 games under 500 now. I enjoy watching Reds games, even when they lose, they're a fun youthful bunch. I just like what they have going on. Matt McClain's been incredible. Time to bring up Ellie De La Cruz. Let's just see what we have. Like you said, we're not trying to trade for people. We just want to see the Reds' best potential roster. We just want to see them on the field. And I think if that happens, who knows what can happen.
I want the 26 best players in the Reds organization on the roster. And there's no doubt that Ellie isn't one of the 26 best players. I mean, it's
right.
I understand there's reasons for, you know, for letting him kind of play a little bit longer down there, but he's kind of making a mockery of the league. Like, just listening to some of the broadcasts from the other teams when they're in Syracuse, their broadcaster sounded disgusted and awestruck at the same time after one of the home runs totally cleared the scoreboard. Like, he's laughing through the pain. Like, can you guys get this guy out of the International League? So
it's like the 12 under basketball. It's like the 12 under basketball team that shows up with a 7-footer. You're like, really? That kid's 11? Really? The guy that just 360 windmilled on my son? Yeah, I don't think so.
Can we see some birth certificates here? No. you can find us. I man the keyboard for whatever reason at the Twitter account at TR Bengals Show. Right. I can never point there down there. There we go. you guys have any questions, comments, concerns? If you think Greg needs to shave his beard, email team@riverfrontcitsy.com. Outside of that, we'll probably be back in 2 weeks unless something interesting happens. Outside of that, you guys take care. See y'all.